If you've ever visited Houston, it shouldn't come as a surprise to learn that the third most spoken language in Texas, after English and Spanish, is Vietnamese. Home to more than 120,000 residents of Indo-Chinese descent, open a menu in the Bayou City, and you might notice dishes like Viet Cajun crawfish, brisket pho, or Vietnamese beef fajitas. Now, considering the fact that prior to 1975, fewer than 100 Vietnamese lived in Greater Houston, this community's strength, growth, and visibility is remarkable. Yet the mass migration that followed the collapse of Saigon impacted and reshaped not only the politics, cultures, and foodscapes of cities like Houston, New Orleans, and Dallas, but smaller towns along the Gulf Coast. In this episode, which I originally produced for the Southern Foodways Alliance's podcast Gravy, we'll visit the shores of Aransas Bay and get to know a few remarkable souls who forever impacted a place called Rockport, Texas. I'm Evan Stern, and this is Vanishing Postcards. Before we get started, I'm going to let my friend Brandon Schecksnyder tell you about his show Southern Gothic, which, as a lover of eerie history, is one of my favorite listens. Brandon?
Prepare to enter an immersive world of tragedies, hauntings, legends, and folklore. Southern Gothic is an independently produced podcast documenting the rich history of the American South, stretching from the swamps of Louisiana to the shores of the Carolinas, deep into the mountains of Appalachia, and across the battlefields and earliest settlements of Virginia, guiding you through some of its darkest tales and eerie locations. Join us now on Southern Gothic, the podcast.
Thanks, Brandon. Now let's get back to the show. The town of Rockport, Texas, hugs the shores of Aransas Bay on the Live Oak Peninsula about 30 miles northeast of Corpus Christi. A popular destination for beachcombers since the late 1800s, one of its roughly 10,000 permanent residents is Julie LePam. A native of Vietnam, she can be found most mornings trawling for shrimp in the area's waters, as she has for more than 37 years.
Yeah, I start going waking up like 3 or 4 o'clock a.m. every day. Yeah, sometimes, 30 days in the month, we go, no day off. So it's very hard. It's hard working in the boat, that.
Julie and I are talking in a rented gym that now houses the parish of St. Peter's Catholic Church. The daughter of a fisherman, she took up shrimping after moving here in 1985. But despite her many years in the trade, she says she still has days that barely cover the cost of fuel. Even so, she's generously contributed her catch to the church's monthly fundraiser, which is what has brought us out on this cool fall Saturday.
The people lie, so, I can donate, so.
As we speak, an assembly line of women, led by local seafood market owner Flower Bui, are seated at a long table making summer spring rolls. They carefully take turns wrapping the shrimp into moistened rice paper stuffed with vermicelli, beef, and lettuce that, when finished, will be sold for $5 a pair.
This is the first spring roll, and then the shrimp, we have to boil them first, and we have to peel and devein and cut in half shell, and then we roll in a spring roll. This is a Vietnamese tradition, for a long time. It comes from my parents. They're beautiful, right? Yes.
These rolls are just one of many offerings a mostly white, English-speaking crowd of locals is lining up to purchase from a tent in the building's parking lot. Managing the orders is St. Peter's Choir Director Tam Nguyen, who rattles off today's menu.
You have your blessed egg rolls, your summer spring rolls, your beef kebab, chicken fried rice, lo mein, jumbo fried shrimp, shrimp boil, wings and rice, boon combo. The boon combo, it comes with your vermicelli, your white noodles, your egg rolls, the grilled meat, and then shrimp, and then of course your nước mắm, which is your seasoning, and then a little bit of peanuts and cilantro and lettuce.
This bounty is displayed in a glass case near the front of the tent, where a crew of volunteers have set up a makeshift kitchen complete with a prep counter, fryer, and grill whose smoky scents fill the air. Some customers are taking their meals to go, while a few chow down family style at tables that have been set up inside the gym, mere feet from the altar. Overseeing this affair is Father Tung Tran. He steered this congregation for the past 2 years, and I speak with him after he returns from completing his morning deliveries.
This is a monthly food sale fundraiser, you know, and from my point of view, it's a chance for people to work together and to serve others.
Father Tran says St. Peter's was founded in the early 80s when a group of newly arrived Vietnamese gathered to build a church of their own. And he tells me its name carries some sacred symbolism.
They were given the name St. Peter's. St. Peter's fishermen, you know, and a lot of the people here were fishers and shrimpers.
One who grew up attending services here was Lily Nguyen, whose father, Honyok, was instrumental in its founding.
Bishop go, well, if you can raise $75,000, come back and see me and I'll match it. So I'll give you the other 50%. 2 months. Came back, and he raised it himself.
Mr. Nguyen died in March of 2017. 5 months later, Hurricane Harvey slammed Rockport, destroying St. Peter's Chapel in the process. Rebuilding has proven a challenge, hence its current space and the need for today's fundraiser. Yet challenges are familiar to this community, many of whom fled the communist forces of the Viet Cong and North Vietnamese Army to reach these shores.
I was born in a little town called Binh Da, which translates to Port of Rocks. Remember that later.
Lily's journey to the U.S. began in the spring of 1975, when following nearly two decades of war and a drawdown of American troops and aid, the government of South Vietnam collapsed at the hands of a swift advance from the North. As her father had been a member of the Southern military, he would have certainly faced jail. He told his family they had to leave immediately.
So he secured a 40-foot boat. In the middle of the night, he gathered us up, said, take just one or two pair of clothes, just whatever you can carry with you, nothing else. We saw this light coming at shooting at our boat, like right there. And it teetered our boat, and my dad just gunned that boat out of there. That was a bomb. They dropped a bomb right there in front of us, and something just pushed that boat out, and we got out into the middle of the ocean. Dad didn't know where we were going, so luckily we were able to hit Thailand. So we're one of the first refugees to hit Thailand. We lived off the boat in Thailand for 3 months.
From Thailand, Lily and her family became just a few of more than 120,000 who in 1975 alone resettled in the U.S. through the Ford administration's Refugee Assistance Act. A coordinated effort involving the military, faith groups, local governments, and organizations like the International Rescue Committee, it aimed to pair arrivals with civilian sponsors who could ease their transitions by assisting with accommodation and job placement. In the Nguyen's case, the process took them to Camp Pendleton in California, then Fort Chaffee in Arkansas, where they were matched with a family in Michigan. As they arrived in winter, it was not an easy transition. Yet in time seeking a warmer climate and work as a shipbuilder, Mr. Nguyen moved the family to New Orleans. But their travels weren't over.
Dad found out that he can be a shrimper, be self-employed, don't depend on anybody, don't have a overhead. And then he found our old priest from Binh Da. He was in Rockport. He uprooted us again. And he loved Rockport ever since then. He, you know, living there. He said, I'm not moving out of here. This is my Binh Da of the United States. Rockport, Port of Rock, Binh Da. It just becomes a part of him. He says, this is my town.
Another congregant I meet at the church who followed a similar journey to Rockport is Tran Kelsey. She was born on the Vietnamese island of Phu Quoc, near the coast of Cambodia.
Fishing was our way of life there. That's because we're surrounded by water. Grandmother used the anchovies to make fish sauce. Mom is a fishmonger, and she is also a farmer, and she raised pigs. She raised vegetables, she raised pigs.
Within days of Saigon's collapse, Phu Quoc was invaded by Cambodia's army, the Khmer Rouge, who wanted to stop Vietnam's expansion. Though they were quickly expelled, These moves ultimately gave rise to the Vietnam-Cambodian War. And with the Viet Cong exerting an increasing presence on the island, Train's family made the decision to abruptly leave in 1976.
So they snuck us on a boat. We were floating out at sea, and our boat died, you know. But there was a military craft, huge, that rescued us. I think we would have died if they would not have picked us up, because the boat would not start. And we were starting to get thirsty, hungry, and there were babies.
The American naval ship took them to Guam, and like the winds, they were sent to Arkansas's Fort Chaffee, which in 1975 processed over 50,000 refugees fleeing Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia. From there, they followed sponsors to Rockport, but Train says their introduction to Texas was a little bumpy.
They fed us a fried chicken. We weren't eating it because I don't know what that is. But there was a bag of Texas oranges. We ate that for dinner.
Soon, though, they began to find comforts that reminded them of Phu Quoc.
There was a pier. It was abandoned. It was a rock pier. There were oysters growing on there. So, oh my gosh, Mom, oysters? There's barnacles. And Dad went fishing. The whatever perch and stuff that he could catch. That's what we ate. Almost like Vietnam. There's a bay, there's fishing, there's a church, there's just food. And safe. It's safe.
Just going to take a quick break to say that if, like me, you enjoy a good dose of Southern charm, you owe it to yourself to hear sisters Lainey and Laura Beth, whose Steel Magnolias podcast is in its fourth year of covering life in the American South. Join them every Tuesday for conversations from their table as they uncover Southern traditions that'll make you hungry for low country cooking, thirsty for milk punch, or have you planning a drive along the Natchez Trace. In their nearly 200 episodes, I've heard them unpack the differences between Cajun and Creole, host guests like author Sean Dietrich, and explore cities like Birmingham and Chattanooga. It's an uplifting show that'll leave you better, and I recommend you find and follow the Steel Magnolias podcast wherever you listen. And now, let's get back to the show. The Vietnamese word for what we know as vermicelli is bún, spelled B-U-N. While I've enjoyed it for years, I'm embarrassed to say I was only recently corrected for pronouncing it bun. So at St. Peter's, I take note when I hear an older man in an Aggie sweatshirt ask with a Texas drawl, "What all do you get with the bún combo?" To me, this exchange says a lot about the familiarity and appreciation locals have developed for this food, which years ago was completely alien here. It was no less foreign in the village of Seadrift, which sits about an hour up the coast from Rockport. In 1975, its population was about 90% white, with a mere 4 black residents and no reported Asians. Yet within 4 years following work in fishing and the resettlement program's efforts not to overburden cities, 150 Vietnamese moved to Seadrift. That was no small number for a town of 1,200, and the community they found upon arrival was wrestling with the ripples of a nationwide recession, harsh memories of the Vietnam War, and a fishing industry that was already declining due to environmental threats and state and federal regulations. Fourth-generation fisherwoman, environmentalist, and sea drifter Diane Wilson recalls this period well. She tells me misunderstandings between these outsiders and residents about errors in practice, unspoken rules, and misplacement of crab lines gave rise to terrible tensions.
Some people, what they would call the Vietnamese, oh, just some awful stuff. You have this whole community that doesn't speak English, and they're trying to do that, and there's a possibility of misunderstanding. So it's like, okay, let's get together and figure out how to do this and make it work. And it's like, none of that. It escalated until it just escalated and went out of control.
The peak of this escalation in Seadrift was sparked on August 3rd, 1979. That's when, following a territorial dispute over traps, Sao Van Nguyen, a crabber who'd immigrated from Vietnam, shot and killed local fisherman Billy Joe Applin. Sao and his brother were eventually acquitted by an all-white jury who agreed with their plea of self-defense. But within hours of this incident, three boats and a trailer owned by Vietnamese families were firebombed. In the days that followed, nearly 100 Vietnamese mostly temporarily fled town. At the same time, sensing a publicity and recruitment opportunity, the KKK descended on the coast, where they pursued a harassment campaign in towns like Seadrift, Palacios, Seabrook, and Rockport, which is something Lily remembers.
A certain part of the city, they had a cross, and they were lighting fire and then walking around town in the hood at night. We remember seeing it, and we see it on the news instead, but we didn't go out. And we were scared to go to school, or they kept us home for a week.
Ultimately, Lily says the people of Rockport stuck up for her community. In time, through bridge building at town halls and education efforts facilitated by the Catholic Church, these groups learned how to work together, starting by using language that could be understood by all over CB radio. As a result of steps like these, by the 80s, tensions cooled and a mutual respect began to take root. Today, both Lily and Diane tell me shrimpers along the coast share common concerns, as fuel costs, cheap imports from abroad, and pollution have made an already challenging industry even harder.
I know right now we're trying to do a co-op to bring all the diverse, the Vietnamese, the Hispanic, and the white fishermen, bring them together as a co-op, and they be the bosses. Take away the middleman, and for them to make it diverse and to make it sustainable. And that is the only way they are going to survive. I think this whole United States is a very diverse group of people, and I think we all of our diversity adds to making it better. You bring some of the best parts of yourself to this new start, and I think the whole United States is better for all of us.
In regard to diversity, my friend John Burnett has described Seadrift as more of a mosaic than melting pot. The same can probably be said of Rockport too, as the Vietnamese community represents less than 2% of its citizens. And with shrimping on the decline, many younger Vietnamese Americans, like Lily, have moved to cities like Corpus. She says it's easy to understand why her generation is pursuing other opportunities.
It's hard work. It's hot. Sometimes the storms comes in or there's rocky, and they're still out there trying. So the smaller boats are going away. They are going to school, getting educations, and, you know, doing be the American way instead.
What does this mean for the future of Rockport's Vietnamese community? Train, a former nurse, now runs a septic company with her husband. Lily's brother, Dat Nguyen, played 7 seasons with the Dallas Cowboys and was the first Vietnamese-American player in the NFL. What's more, Dat's prowess on the field not only made him a star at Rockport High, but helped inspire the Nguyen family to pursue a new culinary business that honored their roots.
It got started because of the football team. We were feeding every Friday night and Saturday night. Friday night after each game. And then the football team came up to my mom and said, "Miss Nguyen, you need to open a restaurant. Our parents want to eat the food that we're eating, because we tell them every Friday we're here, we get egg rolls, we get pho, we get lo mein or whatever, and they want to try it. They'll support you." And so my dad kind of overheard, and he goes, "Hey, that sounds good."
They named the restaurant Who Dat, in a pun referencing Dat and his older brother who was another talented player on Rockport's team.
Friday night games, they started to chant because they were doing good. They were getting ready to go playoff. They go, who dat boys, who dat boys. So it became a chant. Mom goes like, "Well, I don't know what to name the restaurant." And the boys go, "Who dat."
That was 30 years ago. And today the family claims 3 locations in Texas. Lily owns and runs the outpost in South Corpus. Her niece Laura looks after the original in Rockport's neighboring village of Fulton, while cousins Liam and Na steer the one in Portland. All serve classics like pho and bún, and were born of the family matriarch Deng Nguyen's influence.
We do make everything from scratch. The sauces, the meat, the marinade daily. We will run out of stuff because there's only so much. My mom always said, you cook like you cook for me. That's been always been my on my mind.
Their mother still cooks for them as she continues to hand prepare egg rolls for each location every week.
Mom's still the building force. So when she retires, I think I'm going to have to, because I cannot do what she does on the homemade egg rolls. And it's our family recipe, and she loves doing it, so she keeps at it.
For today's fundraiser, though, Lily's mother has donated the meat and left the egg rolls up to Flower Bui, who sells them by the dozen at the market she operates in Rockport. Others have chipped in noodles, tea, and vegetables. Many in the tent have volunteered their labor as they busy themselves freshly grilling skewers and frying shrimp. And as all perform their assigned tasks, Father Tran suggests that this event is about more than raising money.
Food is very practical. Food brings comfort. Food is necessary. Food is good. But the making of food, you know, the process, the preparation, the serving, the selling, all of these, I think, contribute to human interactions, human dynamics, and build communities, build friendship.
In talking with Father Tran and seeing the many here at work, I'm reminded that churches are made of people before brick and mortar. So are these entire United States, whose promise Train continues to believe in.
When I was little, I want y'all to know, they said, this is the land of milk and honey. This is where you want to be, because everybody is taken care of here. This is the greatest nation on earth. And I think we should just love each other and help everybody out, because we have so much, you know, we do, and we can share.
Years ago, I saw the author Fran Lebowitz argue emphatically that American culture can't be ruined, because to quote her, the United States is an idea, it's not a culture. It's also worth remembering that while American as apple pie is a popular expression, apple pie came from the Dutch. Will future generations say as Texan as Boone? Never say never. But the men and women of St. Peter's Church serve theirs with pride. And in Rockport, Texas, they know how to say it right. I'm pleased to report that since my visit to Rockport, construction of St. Peter's new church has begun. And if you find yourself around there, please consider supporting their fundraisers and treating yourself to a meal at one of the Who Dats. And if you go to the one in Corpus, tell Lily I say hi. I thank all who spoke with me to make this episode happen, as well as the team at the Southern Foodways Alliance, for whom I originally produced this story. If you like pieces of this nature, do yourself a favor and find and follow their podcast, Gravy, wherever you listen. You can also visit southernfoodways.org to learn more about their excellent work and consider becoming a member. I also thank you for listening. If you like this episode and haven't already, please follow us on your favorite podcast app. It helps us grow, and doing that guarantees you will never miss any content. Also, if you know someone in your life who might enjoy what we're up to, it'd mean a great deal if you could just take a second to text them and share this episode. For photos and more, please find us on Instagram or vanishingpostcards.com, where you're always welcome to reach out. Our theme music was written and performed by Max Kraus and Emily Young. I'm Evan Stern, and hope you'll join us next time for more Vanishing Postcards.